This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
They used to be regular guests in our homes anytime we chose, entertaining us when we switched on our radio and television sets. Now it's time to hear again the voices that came out of the glow. Welcome to the first of our October 2018 broadcasts. Steve and Paul are here with Chris McCabe and the Coasters, El Kayola and the cast of Beyond Our Ken. An extract to start with from a program in the BBC series, Time to Remember. Today, the topic is Advances in Medicine by Alexander Fleming.
Time to Remember. A programme presented by the BBC in which Leslie Bailey, journalist and broadcaster, looks back on some of the events of our lives. In today's programme, Leslie Bailey brings us into direct touch with some of the greatest discoveries of modern times. First, we go over to one of London's hospitals.
I'm speaking to you from the Wright Fleming Institute of Microbiology. It's part of St Mary's, this great hospital close by Paddington Station in London. One little room in this hospital is unique because it's the scene of quite one of the most important discoveries in mankind's long battle against disease and suffering. In this room, in 1928, the late Sir Alexander Fleming discovered penicillin. He was a bacteriologist, and in the laboratory where I am now, Sir Alexander worked to the last day of his life. And working here now is Lady Fleming.
In September 1928, Professor Fleming, as he was known then, was working in a little laboratory here. He was studying the staphylococci, which are microbes which cause certain diseases. To study them, he had put some of the microbes on a glass dish containing a jelly, which is the food for the microbes. It is made from meat. It's a sort of broth, and there they grow and make children, and they form large families, what we call colonies. You might perhaps like to see the original glass dish he used with the microbes on which the discovery started.
Yes, indeed, this is fascinating. The actual dish, it's a small saucer, and across one side of it are scattered a large number of yellow blobs. Now, what are those, Lady Fleming?
They are the colonies of staphylococci, very, very many microbes all together.
What would they cause if they were to get onto me?
If you had no resistance, they might cause boils or might cause blood poisoning.
That was the beginning of an interview I had not long ago with Lady Fleming, a Greek research worker who worked in Alexander Fleming's laboratory and married him a few years before his death. This journey of mine to St. Mary's Hospital was an experience to remember, to hold in one's hand that simple little glass saucer, the origin of an epoch-making discovery. All his life, Alexander Fleming had been interested in ways of fighting the bacterial infections. During the 1914-18 war, he studied the very unsatisfactory action of the then so-called antiseptics on infected wounds. He had little success. Most people would have been disheartened. But all those years of research had one supreme value. They alerted Fleming's mind, prepared it for any possible clue. And one day, the clue came. Fleming was a rugged, homely Scot, and luckily for us all, very untidy. He left dishes like this one lying about in his laboratory. One day, he happened to look at this old dish again. His sharp eye spotted some green mould on it. You can still see it on the dish, which is kept as a museum piece at the hospital today.
Yes, it is the sort of thing you see on cheese or marmalade or bread. These molds come by accident. The original microscopical beginning of it is a spore, a minute particle floating in the air. It must have been floating about in the lab and came down and settled on the dish.
But wasn't this mold rather spoiling his research? Why didn't he now throw the plate away?
He had the real naturalist capacity for observation, and he noticed that something very astonishing had occurred. Do you see what has happened here on the plate?
It is astonishing. All around this patch of green mold, the yellow blobs, the colonies of microbes, have disappeared. Up to a distance of an inch from the mold, they are still positively yellow. Closer than that, they become almost like raindrops, transparent. Does that mean they're harmless?
Yes. He recognized at once that this mold must have been producing a substance which was dissolving the microbes. He set to work to study the substance, which he called penicillin, as thoroughly as he could. He examined it to see whether it would injure the human cells, and when he found that it did not, while it destroyed many of the microbes which caused diseases, he predicted that, purified, it could be used to kill the microbes of many human infections.
So this little dish belongs to a discovery, perhaps the greatest discovery ever made in curative medicine.
Yes, that's quite true. Professor Fleming found that penicillin acted selectively against a very large number of very harmful bacteria, which cause many serious diseases.
In 1928, this discovery went almost unnoticed. Fleming wrote a paper about it in the medical press, but 13 years were to pass before a method of mass producing penicillin in the factory was developed by two research workers at Oxford University, Sir Howard Florey and Dr. Chain. And now, here is the recorded voice of the late Sir Alexander Fleming himself.
The crude penicillin I made in those days was weak and much too impure for injection into the body. It was in 1941 that the true value of penicillin in the treatment of human infections was appreciated. That was in the midst of war, and when it was found that it had a wonderful effect on septic wounds, there was a great drive to have it produced on both sides of the Atlantic. All the early work on penicillin was done in England, and all the information as to how to produce it was given freely to the United States.
Alexander Fleming's work received little recognition in his lifetime, and hasn't had much since. But it's a splendid example of the prepared mind, readied through years of quiet work for that flash of exceptional insight, which is genius.
During the 1960s, U.S. instrumentalist Al Cayola had released a version of the Bonanza theme, and this popular filler and backing track, On the Trail. Hello again to John Newman of Burnside with this. Hope the gloom is at least starting to clear a bit, John. Thank you. This is Broadcasting Nostalgia in Out of the Glow. And that was El Cayola on the Trail. We've come to the end of our current season of Parade with a story from World War One.
Parade! A cavalcade of people, places, and memorable events. In the year 1915, the whole of America was convulsed with fear when one bomb explosion followed another in state and capitol buildings. At first, it was thought that an organized gang was behind the outrages, but at Cornell University, a member of the staff became suspicious when the professor of German, Erich Munter, flew into an uncontrollable rage at the sight of a newspaper.
It's this man, Doctor. This vile, unspeakable man who is going to drag America into the war.
Professor Munter, control yourself.
Look at him. John Pierpont Morgan II. Curse him.
Morgan hasn't many friends,
but he is worth over 750 million pounds sterling. And do you know what he's done? Given England a blank check to pursue the war with Germany. I tell you, Doctor, if this man were dead, then the flow of arms to England would cease and the whole war would fizzle out. If only this man were dead.
But, Professor Munter, that would mean a victory for Germany.
Yes, and an end to the war. This man must die. He has no right to live, Doctor.
The following day, Professor Munter packed a bag containing a bomb and went to the home of John Pierpont Morgan at Glen Cove, Long Island.
I want to see Mr. Morgan. I know he's at home.
Mr. Morgan does not receive anyone without a previous appointment. Perhaps you would care to leave your card, sir.
Perhaps this will let me inside. John Morgan! I am here to destroy you! If you don't come out and face me, I'll shoot every living soul under this roof.
What's going on down there?
I'm going to kill you, Morgan!
Johnson, call the police!
Stay where you are!
Give me that gun.
Do you think I'm a lunatic or a coward to be talked out of doing what I came here to accomplish? I'm not afraid, Morgan.
Give me that gun.
I'll see that it's buried with you. I'm going to kill you.
Get him from behind.
I'm going to finish the war. I'm going to give the whole world peace.
Although shot twice, Morgan fought the mad professor to the foot of the stairs. There, the butler seized a coal scuttle and brought it down with all his might on Munter's head. Munter boasted to the police of his bomb attacks and said he would pray that Morgan would die of his wounds, a prayer which, fortunately, went unanswered. To the very end, when he took his own life in prison, Professor Munter was consumed with what he termed a desire to achieve world peace. You have been listening to the dramatization of a true story from the pages of the National Monthly Magazine, Parade.
Out of the Glow is about melodies and moments from broadcasting history. This is Paul Featherstone, inviting you to tune to an hour of comedy, featured artists, personalities and sports coverage on Plains FM 96.9, the first two Sundays of the month at 5 p.m.
There's the dropout by Oxley. It won't go over the 25. He's trying to kick it along the line.
In a week, we begin a short series of Vignettes of Life. But for now, here's Chris McCabe, our concert-goer.
The Coasters. I saw them in Riccarton Working Men's Club. Yes, that's still around, but no longer functioning as a club, in October 98. And again in 2005 at the Sahara Casino in Las Vegas. Sadly, unable to remember anything of either the personnel at either concert. But the Coasters started way back in 1957, and they were basically a quartet. They sung many songs by Jerry Leiber and Mike Stoller. The name of the Coasters came because the early members were willing to move from the West Coast to the East Coast of the United States of America. And in 1987, the members then were inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They were the first group. So in DJ speak, we're going to hear a double play, Charlie Brown, which came out in 1959, and Poison Ivy.
Hey, up the ladder with a ladder, brother, ladder platter. From the racks and the stacks is the best on wax. Another double goal, no lead, wind, spin, sound, sandwich. From Lucy to Joy, Jimmy to Bobby, and all the kids of the buck, the Boulevard driving, gold. Grooving up the Fab 40, the number one tune on the Teen Tune Top 10, the Coaster!
Charlie Brown, he's gonna get caught.
You may also know the coasters for Yakety Yak, Searchin', and Along Came Jones.
Take out the papers and the trash, or you don't get no spending cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen floor, you ain't gonna rock and roll no more. Yakety Yak!
Don't talk back.
Just finish cleaning up your room. Let's see that dust fly with that broom. Get all that garbage out of sight, or you don't go out Friday night. Yakety Yak!
Don't talk back.
You just put on your coat and hat and walk yourself to the laundromat. And when you finish doing that, bring in the dog and put out the cat. Yakety Yak!
Don't talk back.
Music today on Plains FM Out of the Glow, I have stolen from a 1973 Bell LP called Let the Good Times Roll, The Coasters.
When Chris is back, it will be the turn of Pam Ayres. Afternoon today to Jim Smart in Papua Nui, still enjoying your DVDs, good on you. Bob Gant, technical enthusiast at Church Corner, and Chris Despera of Aranui. Good to have had lunch with you again a few months back. Here's a further episode of the current serial for you all.
Please, put your arms around me. Kiss me.
What?
Kiss me.
That's how it began. A foggy night, a lurking peril, and a lovely girl who was too young to die.
Mike.
Hmm?
Mike. Mum, wake up.
Oh, what time is it?
About 9:30.
I feel I could sleep for a week.
I've brought you some tea.
Tea? For the love of Pete, what kind of a drink is that for the first thing in the morning? Do you have any coffee?
Tea makes a nice change. I'm having a cup, too.
Oh, well, anything for a quiet life. What day is it? I mean, was it last night you gave me a sleeping pill?
Of course it was last night.
I just wondered. Everything in the past seems to have happened 10 years ago.
Nope, only yesterday. And I particularly wanted you to be well today because I want to talk to you.
Okay, go ahead and talk.
Not while you're still half asleep. Here, drink this.
Oh, must I?
Yes.
That's what I thought. I guess I'm not so bad at that.
And what would you like for breakfast?
What are you trying to do, Eve? Embarrass me?
Embarrass you?
Make me feel like a heel, I mean.
If the cat fits, you know, Mike. All I'm trying to do is to see that you have no excuse for not being quite rational. You were so tired yesterday that it would have been a waste of time arguing with you about anything.
Argue? Oh, grief, are we going to have an argument?
Probably, but at least it'll be a sane one.
Eve, you may as well know I have things to do today. Couldn't we argue some other time?
What things do you have to do?
Well, I want to see Inspector Charlton. I've got to find out about... I've got to see this...
Yes, I was afraid of that. Still worrying about that girl.
Okay, so I am. Now, if he's arrested her, why is he so cagey?
He hasn't arrested her.
He hasn't? At least... How do you know?
Why do we always have to get onto this? I met the inspector downstairs when I was collecting the mail.
Oh? What, just now? This morning?
He was coming to see you. I told him he was still asleep, so he didn't come up.
What did he say?
He asked me to give you a message.
Yes. Well, what is it?
He said to tell you that the police did not arrest anybody at your flat down by the rocks.
They didn't? That's odd. Unless he's lying.
I don't know what made me think we would be likely to have a sensible discussion today. All I've done is waste a perfectly good sleeping tablet.
I'll buy you some more.
And a very good cup of tea.
I'll also buy you a pound of tea, the expensive stuff.
And what do you think you'll use for money? £1,000 I gave you?
I suppose I asked for that.
Oh, don't kid yourself. You never really get what you're asking for. If you did, you wouldn't be here, in my apartment, sleeping in one of my beds.
It was your idea.
And seeing you're so impossible, you may as well have the rest of your message.
What's this?
Going to keep it till after we'd talked, but I might have guessed that would be a waste of time.
Mike Chester, you won't be needing your pistol. Why not try pawning it again?
Cryptic, to say the least.
Eve, where'd you get this?
It was in the letterbox this morning. Just like that. A slip of paper with a typewritten message. No envelope, nothing else.
What the...
Don't look at me. I didn't write it, if that's what you're thinking.
Won't be needing your pistol. Why not try pawning it? What the dickens... Pawning? Oh, for crying out loud. Charlie.
Charlie? Oh, yes, of course, Charlie. Fancy my not remembering dear old Charlie. I mean, everybody knows good old Charlie.
Eve, I've got to get up and get dressed. Never mind about breakfast.
Well, here we go again. Just tell me one thing.
What?
Who is Charlie?
Charlie? Charlie Tinker?
Right behind you, Mike.
Oh. Hi, Charlie. I got your message.
Why must you always be so forthright about everything, Mike? Sometimes it's better to be subtle.
You mean cryptic. You love to be cryptic, don't you, Charlie?
I like to be safe, that's what. And I like my neck the same way.
Charlie, she came here to you?
She came.
Where is she?
Come with me. Out the back. Uh-huh. I don't like this setup, Mike. You may as well know that. The sooner we get our business over, the better.
I agree. Well, I've been waiting for you to get me that plane and the pilot.
I think I've got that organised. So, as I say... Oh, here we are. Just a second now.
What's all this?
Unless she gets my code knock, she won't unlock the door. And I told her to get out the back way if anybody tries to bust it down.
What is it, Charlie? Oh, Mike, thank heavens.
Take it easy, darling. Everything's okay. You're safe, that's all.
Oh, Mike, I was so frightened. I didn't know what to do. When I saw the police car pull up outside your flat, I decided to do what you told me to do.
You got out the back way?
Yes, I didn't know what to do, where to go, and then I thought of Charlie.
I wish you hadn't, but no use crying over spilt milk.
You were good to let me stay here, Charlie. I don't know what I would have done otherwise.
Never mind that. Mike, she can't stay here any longer, you know? It's too risky.
That's okay, Charlie. She won't need to stay. Come on, Jan. Let's go. Here. Drink this. It'll make you feel better.
Thanks. Brandy. That's what you gave me the first night I came here.
I scarcely waited to drink it then. It rushed away like a frightened bird.
I was frightened, Mike. Just as I was frightened when the police came and I was alone here.
Well, you needn't have been, really. I'd rather the police than someone like our late friend Blaney.
You don't understand.
How?
Mike, I was frightened for you.
For me? That doesn't make sense.
Well, it does to me, don't you see? I hate the thought of the trouble you might be in over me. If it was just myself, I wouldn't panic like that.
Look, you mustn't worry about me, darling. I went into this with my eyes wide open.
That's what you think. But you know so little about me. I came to you one night out of a fog.
I knew at once that we were destined to meet, that if you needed help, I had to help you.
Mike, the more you get involved in my troubles, the less I like it.
What's that? You trying to get rid of me?
I worry about you. When I'm on my own, it's bad enough, but now there's you and I...
Slow down, darling. I'm in this because I want to be. Because you're more important to me than anything.
Are you sure, Mike?
Well, of course I'm sure, but if you want to go your own way, alone... Well, I never did like being a passenger. Oh,
please, darling, I didn't mean that. I need you. But I worry about you, and sometimes I start wondering what you'd do if you heard things about
me. You're crazy, Jan. I've already heard things about you that I know aren't true. I happen to be in love with you. Had you forgotten that?
No, I hadn't forgotten that. But if you ever forget it, Mike...
Is that what you're really afraid of? Well, you can stop worrying about everything. You're mine and I'm yours, Jan, and that's all there is to it.
I thought you wouldn't make it. I was leaving a note for you.
A note? What about?
I'm going out for dinner.
Huh? Who with?
If it's any of your business, which I very much doubt.
Oh, sorry. It was just automatic.
I'm not going with anyone.
Oh. Well, shall we eat together then?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't feel like eating with you any old time you happen to want to turn up. Where have you been all day?
Most of the day. At my place.
Your flat? Alone?
No. Not alone.
Ah, silly of me to ask. I just had a faint, fleeting hope that,
That what?
That you might have gone there to write your novel.
Oh, I doubt if I'll take that up again.
Why not?
Oh, I just don't feel the way I did before. A man writes of things the way he feels them.
When you say before, presumably you mean before you met that girl.
If you like.
You know, I find myself wondering about her. I mean, she must have something to interest a man like you.
Thanks. I'm glad to know that you don't think I'd be interested in just any girl who happened along.
Oh, now, how could I think that? After all, Mike, I happened along once, didn't I? And I'd hate to think of myself as just any girl. I've too much ego for that.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. You told me you'd lost your ego.
No, I didn't. I said my self-respect. Not quite the same thing.
Eve, as far as I'm concerned, you haven't lost anything.
Well, I suppose it's good of you to try to let me down lightly. But I have been crawling to you, Mike.
Oh, well, if you insist on looking at it like that...
I don't think there's any other way to look at it. Anyway, it's over.
Over?
You win, Mike. I can't go through with it.
You mean our deal?
I mean our deal. It's off. I was a fool to ever think I could make it work. So, let's call it off. And, as soon as possible.
I'd made a deal to go back to Eve, who was still my wife. Now she was telling me it wouldn't work, that the deal was off. Perhaps she meant to shock me. Yet as I stood looking at her, the only thought in my mind was how this would affect the safety of Jan Carter. That kid was too young to die.
Finally today in Out of the Glow, we join Kenneth Horne, Kenneth Williams, Betty Marsden, and Hugh Paddock for an extract from a program of Beyond Our Ken from 1960.
It's especially for you, Ted Moore in Rangiora, and Kathleen and Doug Corbett of Glenora Place in Hornby.
Okay, Chuck, this one's ready. Stand clear. Timber!
Well, that's another one, McGinty.
Yeah. Boy, am I fed up with chopping these gosh darn trees down day after day. Who'd be a lumberjack?
What are you talking about, man? It's a great life.
Ah, shucks.
You're like all the other guys around here moaning all the time. Why be miserable? Look at me. I really enjoy being a lumberjack. You gotta whistle while you work. You gotta whistle.
Well, that was an excerpt from The Most Happy Fella. The last in our series, A Show to Remember, which may also help you to forget the face I pull to get a laugh at this point every week.
Meanwhile, for those who haven't been able to see that face, here is a sort of radio show which is beyond our ken. Among those taking part are Sir Hugh Grit, the cloakroom attendant's poetry lovers circle, Murchison Thripp, Miss Rona Rancid.
She's gone off a bit.
Game to the last. To continue. Lofty Shorthouse. The Sheik of Golders Green. And, of course, Mr. Kenneth Horne, who prefers to remain anonymous. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Anonymous.
He thinks he's going to be in the next series, I expect. Welcome to this last in our present series of Beyond Our Ken, affectionately known to us as B.O.K., because we hope it'll be O.K. on the night. Well, now, let me, as usual, tell you what's been happening since we last met. On Saturday, I went to the cinema and saw a film all about life among the Eskimos. Quite an eye-opener it was. I learnt one thing from it. Those Eskimo girls will do anything for a cloth coat. I thought you'd have to think about that one a bit. Monday, I was going to see Fanny by gaslight, but she'd had electricity put in. So instead, I decided to take a bus somewhere. It was great fun. The London Transport were a bit annoyed. I took it to Pontefract. Anyway, it was all right. I took the bus back 2 days later, and they thought it was just running late. On Wednesday, I got into more trouble when I had my face slapped at a big cocktail party I attended. Very charming young lady. It wasn't really my fault. I mean, the badge she was wearing did say press. Thursday, I spent most of the day at home playing the piano. Now, that may surprise you, but for years I've been playing the piano on and off. Always had a rather slippery stool. Actually, at one time, I even played in a trio. It was only a small trio, just the two of us. Me on the piano and Yehudi Menuhin on vibes. However, Thursday evening, I did pop out for a meal, and I ordered a salad. Well, when it arrived, it looked a bit bare, so I called the waiter over and said, "Just look at this salad. I've never seen a salad so bare." And he said,
"Oh, well, sir, it's the French dressing, you know."
Which explained everything, really. That's all the news up to date. Now, where's the cast? Where's the cast? Come on. Come on. All right. Now, gather round. Listen a moment. Now, look, this is the last show. You know, and I've been thinking, perhaps we ought to make a suitable gesture to our producer. No. William's not that sort of gesture at all. I mean, well, I think we ought to show our appreciation for what he's done for us.
Wonderful idea.
I agree. Yes.
Well, what has he done for us?
Oh, well, all sorts of things, like... then he was always very... you must admit Yes, what has he done for us?
Oh, no, Ken, be fair. I mean, I'm sure we can all honestly say that whenever the opportunity arose, Jakes was always there with a helping hand.
Yes, you can say that again.
No,
I mean, you couldn't have a more polite, courteous, considerate old gentleman. Well, look what his wife told us. He never forgets to hold open the door for her when she fetches the coal in.
Yes, well, perhaps we should give him a small token of our esteem, but what now?
Why don't we give him something to wear on formal occasions?
Such as?
Well, for instance, teeth.
Ah, dear, you know, it's so difficult to know the right thing. Now, let's see. Has anybody got anything they'd like to get rid of? Kenneth Williams.
What a splendid idea. I'm sure Jakes would love to get rid of Kenneth Williams.
That's charming. All right, Paddock, why don't you give him one of your old suits, like the one you're wearing?
Now, just a minute. Look, this isn't getting us anywhere. Betty.
Yes, Ken, yes.
Can you think of anything we can give our producer?
No, nothing.
Well, that's the best suggestion so far.
Of course. Why didn't we think of it before? We'll give him nothing.
Well, at least it's practical.
Yes. Oh, all right. Let's get him over here and tell him. Oh, Jakes. Where is he? Jakes.
Coming.
Well, Jakes, the cast and I have been having a little chat, and, well, Jakes, on behalf of all the cast and myself, as a token of the very high esteem in which we hold you, I have much pleasure in presenting you with this.
Oh, thank you. What is it?
Nothing.
Oh, you shouldn't have.
Go on, Jakes, take it. We know it's not much, but it's the thought that counts.
Speech. Oh, no, really, I hardly know what to say.
Well, that makes a change.
Oh, look, a little tear has crept into the corner of his eye.
Well, it's not every day he gets nothing.
All I can say is, I shall treasure it always.
Oh, come on. You can do better than that, Jakes. Make it more dramatic.
Yes,
Lift it off the paper.
Oh, yes. More feeling. I try it with the emphasis on treasure. I shall treasure it always.
I shall treasure it always. Exits dramatically, effects door shut.
Those are the directions.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You'd think he'd know, wouldn't you? Now, door, please.
Well, thank goodness he's gone.
Well, now, on with the show. You know, I thought it'd be... Hello? Who can that be, as if I didn't know? Hello?
Good heavens, it's Kenneth Thorne.
Pat Lancaster, you've been dying to say that, haven't you? All right, sing, Pat.
Day in, day out, the same old hoodoo follows me about. The same old pounding in my heart whenever I think of you. And darling, I think of you day in and day out. Day out, day in, I needn't tell you how my days begin. When I awaken with a tingle, one possibility in view, that possibility of maybe seeing you. Come rain, come shine, I meet you and to me the day is fine. Then I kiss your lips and the pounding becomes the ocean's roar, a thousand drums. Can't you see it's love? Can there be any doubt when there it is? Tingle, one possibility in view, that possibility of maybe seeing you. Come rain, come shine, I meet you and to me the day is fine. Then I kiss your lips and the pounding becomes a thousand drums, the ocean's roar. Can't you see it, love? Can there be any doubt when there is?
Jolly nice pants.
Thank you. And now, Ken, as this is the last show for a while, we've got a surprise for you. Stand by.
This week, we bring you a scorching and sensational life story.
It's savage, sordid, tempestuous.
Packed with human emotions and wild passion, we present...
The Kenneth Horne Story.
Only once in a lifetime does a personality come along who possesses so many fine qualities. Wit, charm, abounding talent. A man who is loved by everyone. But unfortunately, we're not doing the Kenneth Williams story. Ours is the Kenneth Horne story.
Yes, Kenneth Horne. Gay, vital, ebullient, mellifluous. A man of infinite taste. Elegant, charming, brilliant raconteur. A rich...
I'll get on with it.
You don't mind.
Well, hanging it out please. Like that.
Pardon that interruption, isn't it? Kenneth Horne, how much do we really know of him?
Well, I could tell you a thing or two.
Do you remember that voice?
Oh, I say, really, you haven't got her here, have you?
Yes. Come in, Mavis Prendergast.
Well, after all these years, eh?
I'm terribly sorry. I'm afraid I don't remember you.
Of course you do. How could you forget your old games, mistress?
Well, well. Bless my soul. Bless my soul, old knees-bend Prendergast.
Yes, that's right. It's me, dear Lemuel.
Lemuel?
Oh, yes. His name then used to be...
No, please, Mavis.
Yeah, but I thought everyone knew. Lemuel Watersprite.
Lemuel Watersprite.
All right. That's enough out of you, Leslie Blancheflower.
How did you know?
Anyway, all we're trying to establish is that at school, Kenneth Horne was a very good sport.
So was Mavis Prendergast.
From school, Kenneth Horne went to Cambridge University, and as a young man distinguished himself in the debating society. His wit and oratory won general acclaim. They still talk of his sparkling repartee on the occasion when one of our up-and-coming politicians was speaking in the union debate.
Furthermore, this House believes in the freedom of individual expression. And gentlemen, if there ever comes a time when we should lose sight of that glorious adventuring spirit and the true conception of a life free from one can fear, and not to mention the British Empire, in which our loyalty and devotion must never for a minute falter, then, gentlemen, this I would finally say, let us go forward with supreme optimism in the prosperity and continuing progress of expansion, knowing that we, of all people, believe in our island heritage.
Oh, belt up!
From university, he entered the world of commerce.
A financial wizard with the luck of Midas. Anything he touched turned to gold.
For instance, he had a golden secretary. But even in the frantic whirl of business life, he found time for show business. He formed a dance band known as the Kenneth Horne Hotshots.
Ken himself played alto sax and also delighted the customers with his vocals, with such popular numbers of the day as... Good night, Cock Foster, you city of a million memories. The fragrant perfume of a thousand cigars and boozing in bars in June. Good night, Cock Foster. It's 40 minutes on a 2-9 bus. A trip to paradise that's hard to resist. It's shrouded in mist in June. Sweet city of Middlesex, you turn me into a broken-hearted clown. From Piccadilly, it's a stone's throw, just at the other end of town. Good night, Cockfosters.
And good night, Kenneth Horne.
That's where we'll have to leave it for this week. But in 7 days, we'll be back with Eddie Lowe giving a concert in the Groove, Groucho Marx, Dad and Dave, and Liberace. Take care until then, and may life be looking up for you. Bye. Out of the Glow is an Ear Media presentation recorded at WebMad Christchurch.